So yeah, last time we sort of did a review of spin one half, and we talked about assigning a basis given your states and using that to find a matrix for your operators, this kind of thing. And then we did some basic exercises in programming and using NumPy. So today we're going to build on this. We're going to first talk about what are called tensor product spaces. Basically, it's the rigorous version of how to have a quantum system that has multiple independent parts. So we want to sort of get that framework done and figure out how all the math works for that, how to write matrices for operators, all of this stuff. And then we're going to apply that to solve the Ising model with two sites. And that's pretty much what we're going to get through for today. And then on Monday next week, we're going to finish up the two-site Ising model and then go through the case where we want to solve the Ising model with an arbitrary number of sites. Okay, so let me get started then. Okay, so as I said, the first topic for today, which is going to be sort of the main topic, is what are called tensor product spaces. So the setup here, I'm not going to give a sort of fully general picture, but I'm going to try to be concrete so it's easier to understand. We're going to suppose we have two spin one half systems, which I'll call A and B. And as we discussed last time, each of these is a vector space with two basis states, which we denote as up and down. Now, since there are two of them, I want to be sort of extra clear, and I'm going to label these as up A, down A, and up B, down B. And the question that we want to answer is, what are all the allowed states of this two-spin system? And the answer is any state in what's called the tensor product space which is the vector space whose basis is the following four vectors. So the way you should think about each of these things is, this is a sort of combined basis vector. It's pretty much an ordered pair. So this is just a definition. And for right now, don't worry too much about this X in a circle symbol. That's the tensor product symbol. I'm going to go through a number of properties which will define what that symbol actually means. But for now, you should just think of that as really meaning it's really like I have something like this. It's just a list of first the state of A and then the state of B afterwards. Okay, so the things that we need to know that we can do with this, of course, it's a vector space. So a general state is just some superposition. of these things. Like this. Okay, so that's the first thing we need to know. Second thing we need to know is how can we do things with these states? So the kinds of things we normally do with states, we can apply operators to them, we can take inner products, we can find expectation values. These are all the kinds of things we want to do. So the one I want to start with is the inner product. So let's suppose I have a state that looks like this. I have two states, which I'll call psi A, tensor psi B, and phi A, tensor phi B. Then the inner product of these is defined as follows. So in other words, I first look at the parts on A from psi and from phi, and I take their inner product. Then I look at the parts for B from psi and from phi, and I take their inner product, and then I multiply those two results together. So let me give you some intuition about why we do it this way. So what we're picturing is that we have two sites here. We have A and we have B, and we have our first state looks like this, psi A tensor psi B. Our second state looks like this, phi A tensor phi B. And so the point is, so what an inner product is supposed to do is supposed to tell you how similar states are to each other. Like the maximum value is one, that's if your state is the same. The minimum value is zero if your states are orthogonal. So if I want to know, is this the same as this? The question I can ask is the part on A the same as the part on A here? And is the part on B the part same as the part on B? So like if the two parts on A are the same and the two parts on B are the same, then the whole state is also the same. So this question right here I ask, you know, is the state of particle A the same? And here I ask, is the state of particle B the same? So one very important consequence of this definition is that if the A part is orthogonal or the B part is orthogonal, the whole state is. In other words, if this quantity here is zero, then this product is also zero. If this factor is zero, the product is zero. Okay, so let me give you a sort of concrete example here. Let's suppose that I have two states. My two states are this. I'm going to start with the basis state that is up tensor up, that is up on spin A and up on spin B. And I'm going to find the inner product of this with another state, which is 1 over root 2 times up on spin A, up on spin B, plus up on spin A, down on spin B. So One thing that you should know about inner products in general is that if I have something like this, since we're doing linear algebra, everything is linear. That means it distributes. In other words, the result would be this. So we can use this for our tensor product space as well. So that means that the inner product of, let me give these states names. I'm going to call this state psi, and I'm going to call this state phi. So that means then that the inner product psi with phi is equal to 1 over root 2 times the inner product of up tensor up with up tensor up plus 1 over root 2 times inner product up tensor up with up tensor down. And now we can do these calculations. So if we look back at, if you look at this term here, you can see this is, if I look at first the inner product of the A part with the A part, that's up with up, so I get 1. If you look at the inner product of the B part with the B part, that's up with up, so I get 1. So overall I have 1 times 1, which is equal to 1. In this one, I have the inner product of up with up, which is 1, and the inner product of up with down, which is 0. So the second term is going to be 0. So overall, I got 1 over root 2 times that plus 1 over root 2. So my result finally is 1 over root 2. So any example we'll do is going to be similar to this. Another thing we want to be able to do, so this is, first we wanted to say a general state. Then we wanted to look at inner products. So the next thing, which is sort of the last sort of key ingredient, is how to apply operators. So any operator in this language is going to look like this. It's going to be a sum of pieces, each of which is an operator that acts on A, tensored with an operator that acts on B. So let me then define how this acts. So that's just the definition. If I act with this tensor operator on my tensor state, tensor operator here on the tensor state, the result is I apply the A part of the operator to the A part of the state, so I get OA acting on psi A, and I apply the B part of the operator on the B part of the state, and I get OB acting on psi B. So again, the intuition here, like before, is that I have two separate states, basically. This is my psi A tensor psi B, and I want to apply an operator which has OA that acts only on site A and OB that acts only on site B, but I do these simultaneously. So this OA acts on site A and OB acts on site B, in that case, my new state of the two particle system. And of course, if I want to act this more general operator, I can use linearity So I first act the first piece and I get this kind of state. And then I act with every other term from the sum. And at the end, I take the superposition of all those different terms. So from this definition, we can see a few other useful facts, which I want to demonstrate. So this is sort of a corollary of this definition. Let's suppose I want to multiply two operators. So I have OA tensor OB, and I want to multiply this by the operator OA tilde tensor OB tilde. So to do that, let me apply it to a state. So I have psi A tensor psi B. So the first thing that I can do is I apply the operator to the state like this. And I get OA tilde acting on psi A, tensor OB tilde acting on psi B. And then I can apply the next operator and I get this. And then finally, I can factor the operators back out again. Like that. So then what you can see, the conclusion is that this is true. Okay, so this is our first corollary. There's going to be a second one as well, which is we're going to consider operators that look like this. We have an arbitrary operator O that acts on particle A, an identity operator that acts on particle B. And then we have identity operator on particle A and some arbitrary operator on particle B. And these two things will always commute. So to see why, if we look at our commutator, we can just write it out. That's OA tensor IB. ID times ID tensor OB minus ID tensor OB times OA tensor ID. And then we use our multiplication rule that we just developed and we find this is in fact equal to OA tensor OB minus OA tensor OB, which of course is equal to zero. So, this fact you can write as operators on different sites commute. So in other words, I have my spin on A and I have a spin on B, and I want to apply sigma z, let's say, on this operator on this site, and sigma x on this site. Then I can apply, I can either do first apply sigma z to A, then sigma x to B, or opposite order. Or apply at the same time. Those three different operations would be written as respectively identity tensor sigma x, after sigma z tensor identity. That's the first one. The second one would be the opposite. And the third one would just be sigma z tensor sigma x. So of course, you can check that most pointies out, all three are equivalent, and that's exactly the point, is that I can do sort of operations whatever order I want, as long as they're all in different sites. Okay, so one thing I want to emphasize here, actually, which I haven't sort of been super clear about, though, you cannot have something that's just like sigma z acting on A. That's not a valid operator anymore, because we have a system of two spins, but this only acts on one spin. So you must, if you want to do this, use sigma z acting on A tensor with the identity on B. So if what you want to do is basically this, you want to act with some operator only on the one spin and ignore the other ones, it's required in this language that you do tensor product with identity on all the spins that you want to ignore. So that's going to be important in just a minute when we're going to construct matrices for these operators. Okay, so now I want to put all these things together. But I guess before we do that, maybe there's one more thing I should say, actually. So something else that we can do with our states, this goes in our list of things to do with tensor product states. Which is how to get probabilities out of this. So I think that you are sort of used to the general statement. So like with the one spin, for example, if we had psi equals A times up plus B times down, then the probability of being up is the absolute value of A squared, and the probability of being down is the absolute value of B squared. So in the two-spin situation, let's consider like back to my sort of generic state, which looks like this. Okay, so let me ask the question here. What is the probability that spin A is up and spin B is up? So this actually we can do directly. So like here, the reason why the probability of spin up is absolute value of A squared is because A is the coefficient of the basis state with spin up. So here, if I want to know what is the probability that both spins are spin up, I can look for that basis state. And that probability is going to be this coefficient squared. In the same way, the probability that spin up, that A is spin up and B is spin down is going to be the absolute value of B squared. Okay, so now with these two things together, we can now do something that we sort of couldn't get from the simple definition of the probabilities being coefficients of basis states, which is what is the probability that spin up is A, independent of what spin B happens to be doing? And the answer is that this is just going to be the sum of these two things. So in other words, it's like the sum of probability of spin up on A and like some state, we'll call S, on B, and you sum over all possible values of that S on B. So similarly, the probability that you could have a spin up A being down is going to be C squared plus D squared. So hopefully this makes sense. And one thing we're going to do with this, which we'll also check in two other ways in just a minute, is I want to calculate the expectation value of this operator, sigma z acting on A. And now, of course, I just told you this is not well-defined. So what I really mean, if I write this, is the expectation value of sigma z acting on A and the identity acting on B. Okay, so there are many ways you can do this, but in this case, I want to use this probability stuff that we've just defined. So this is just going to be equal to 1 times the probability that spin is up on A minus 1 times the probability that spin is down on A. So this is just like an intuitive definition of what this expectation value would be. It's the average, if you went and measured this property a bunch of times, it's the average value you would get. And of course, as we just said, that's a squared plus b squared minus c squared plus d squared. Okay, so now we're gonna do our first application here, which is in the state psi, that is this state here, in this state, we're going to calculate this sigma z A tensor identity on B expectation value directly. In other words, what we're going to find is this. Okay, so we have our two copies of psi and its adjoint. And then we're going to apply this operator to psi and then take the inner product with psi. So the first step is to do this calculation. And so get the terms that we'll get here are, we get sigma z A tensor identity on B, for example, applied to up tensor up. Is just going to give me like sigma z acting on up, tensor identity acting on up, which is again up up. And if we do go through the same calculation for other states, like for example, another piece that appears let me do this one. This is equal to minus down tensor up. And so if we go ahead and do this calculation, what we find in the end is A times up tensor up plus B times up tensor down minus C times down tensor up minus D times down tensor down. So this is my state after applying the operator, and then I'm going to take the inner product with psi. And if you do this out, so like psi is going to have all these same terms, and most of you have 16 terms in total. So 12 of them are going to be zero, because either the A parts or the B parts don't match. And then we have four terms left over, which are going to give me absolute value a squared plus absolute value of b squared minus absolute value of c squared minus absolute value of d squared. So this is a calculation which I think is good practice for you to do. I'm not sure it's that helpful for me to spend time on it right now, but I would encourage you to do it later on your own. But I guess right now it doesn't make sense to do it as an exercise because there's lots more to cover today, and based on the morning session, I do think I'm going to be short on time, so I want to move along. However, before I do that, I do want to stop and see if you have any questions. So if you have questions now, would be a good time to ask. So I'll stop for a minute or so to see if anybody has a question. Okay, well, it doesn't seem like any questions are forthcoming. So now we're going to move on. We're going to do expectation value. What's that? In the third method. And this is a method which I think is going to be, in the end, probably the most useful one. So what we're going to do here is use a matrix representation of our system. So what we need to do in order to do this, so we need to, as we did for spin 1/2, first assign basis vectors. Then we want to find a matrix for this operator, sigma z acting on A, tensor identity acting on B. Then we want to find matrix vector matrix or vector representation for psi. And then we're going to multiply them out. So the first step is to assign basis vectors. And here there is a sort of a standard choice. I'm also going to take this opportunity to introduce a shorthand notation. So I'm just going to write this state sometimes like this. As a single ket with two different up arrows in it. So if you see this symbol, you should assume that it always means this. This is actually the meaning of it. But of course, this is just much faster to write. So using this shorthand notation, I'm going to make the following assignment of vectors. So these are going to be my four basis vectors I'm going to use to find matrices. OK, so that was our first step. Our second step is to find a matrix for this operator. So if you remember the method we used last time, we were talking about spin 1/2 things. We're going to use the same method as before. So this is a general rule that the first column is going to be the action of sigma z tensor identity on the first basis vector, 1, 0, 0, 0. So we can go ahead and calculate this then. Let's do that. So this acting on this state, first thing we do is we substitute in the meaning of that state. So what it in fact means is up or up tensor up. Then we act these operators. So the result is sigma z up tensor identity acting on up, which of course is just, again, up tensor up, or in other words, 1, 0, 0, 0. So that's going to be the first column of our matrix. For the second column, we want to act on 0, 1, 0, 0, which is equal to up tensor down. So acting with sigma z tensor identity, this becomes, again, up tensor down, which of course is just 0, 1, 0, 0. And if we continue on like this, we can do the other two columns. And finally, the result that we would find is a diagonal matrix where the diagonal elements are 1, 1, minus 1, minus 1. So that was our second step. The third step is to find a vector for psi. In this case, so you may remember that psi looks like this. A times up up plus B times up down plus C times down up plus D times down down. So if we write this as a vector, it just becomes the vector A, B, C, D, like that. So then finally, the last step is that the expectation value, psi sigma z tensor identity psi, looks like this. Let me start a new line. And if I multiply this out, then of course what I get is once again the same as what we got from before. Okay, so in all of this different parts of the calculation we've just done and the multiple ways of calculating the expectation values and so forth, the single most important thing is this. Generating a matrix given a choice of basis and a particular operator. That's sort of like the most important skill that you need to take from this. And in order to practice that skill, I'm now going to give you an exercise to work on. Which is to find the 4x4 matrices in this with this basis for two different operators, sigma y acting on A, tensor sigma z acting on B, and the opposite, sigma z acting on A and sigma y acting on B. So at this point, let me look at the time. So we're almost at the halfway point. I think that's okay. So I'm going to actually send you into the breakout rooms for this exercise. It's going to be quick, but we might as well do that. And I'll give you between 5 and 10 minutes, depending on how it seems that people are doing with exercise. And then we'll come back together and continue. So, okay. I'm not going to go through all the steps of the math, but I'm going to just write down what the answers are. And then I'll show you sort of a trick that you can use to do these kind of calculations faster. So the first one, the matrix that you should have found, looks like this. And the second one looks like this. So hopefully if you finished exercises, what you got is something along these lines. And if you didn't have a chance to finish it, you should definitely later go back and make sure that you can work this out. But for right now, what I want to show you is a way that you can actually do this calculation very quickly. It's sort of a shortcut to getting matrices for these tensor products. So I'm going to divide these matrices into 2x2 blocks like this. And then I want to look at the blocks and try to notice something about them. So this block here, to me, looks like minus I times sigma z. And this block here looks like I times sigma z. In the same way, this block here looks like minus 1 times sigma y. And this block looks like 1 times sigma y. Now, of course, a block of all zeros doesn't give you very much to work with. But I can choose to say this is also 0 times sigma z, and this is also 0 times sigma z. And this one I'm going to say is 0 times sigma y. And this one I'm going to say is 0 times sigma y. So just bear with me for a moment. And notice that if I look at this 0 that's multiplied by sigma z, this minus I, this I and that 0, and I put those together into matrix, what this looks like is 0 minus I, 0, which of course is sigma y. Similarly here, if I look at 1, at like this, so 1, 0, 0, minus 1, that's just sigma z. So in other words, I can write the matrix for sigma y tensor sigma z by taking the elements of sigma y and multiplying each one by sigma z. And those become blocks of the matrix. More generally, let's consider I have a matrix A, which looks like A11, A12, A21, A22. And I want to calculate A tensor B. The 4x4 matrix for this tensor operator is going to be A11 times the matrix of B, A12 times the matrix of B, A21 times the matrix of B, and A22 times the matrix of B. So this was at least true in both of these example cases. And my claim is that it's, in fact, always true. Although, of course, it's important to realize that this is basis dependent. So this is always true if you make the correct choice of basis. And so we did make that correct choice. So if I look at the way I ordered the basis here, I did like up tensor down, down tensor up, and down tensor down. So what you can see is that I sort of first grouped the first spin, and then after that, I ordered by the second spin. So if this is my first basis vector, that's like 1, 0, 0, 0. The way I can tell that I constructed the basis correctly in order to do this sort of trick is that I can also construct my basis vector in the same way. So this is up, remember, is the 1, 0 vector. So if I construct 1, 0, tensor 1, 0 in the same way I constructed these matrices, that I get like 1, times the vector 1, 0, and 0 times the vector 1, 0, which is 1, 0, 0, 0. So in other words, as long as I use this trick to construct both my basis vectors and my matrix, it'll always be consistent and always work. So this thing here has a name, and it's called the Kronecker product. So the moral of the story right here is that the matrix for OA tensor OB is the Kronecker product of matrices for OA and OB. Okay, so again, now I want to pause for questions because at this point we're going to change gears completely and we're going to spend the last half hour today talking about the Ising model. So I'll give you a minute to see if you have any questions that you come up with, and otherwise we'll continue. Okay, well, if there aren't any questions, then we're going to, as I said, change gears completely. So now we're going to be basically done with our sort of very abstract definitions and background work and framework and stuff, and we're going to return to the Ising model. So for today, I'm not going to do the fully general case. What we're going to consider is the model specifically on two sites. But this is going to help us get some insights that we're going to use next time to solve the more general model. So let me write down again what the model actually is. So it looks like this. We have a sum on I, which are sites in a cis one-dimensional chain. Of a product of a z operator and a z operator, and then we have a second term, which is a sum of x operators. So, okay, the first thing that I want to do is deal with the fact that this s, like siz, is really h bar over 2 times the Pauli matrix that we've been working with, sigma iz. So this h bar over 2, I want to get rid of this. Because just carrying units around and stuff is going to be really annoying. So fortunately, we can do that, though. I can rewrite my model as, I'm just going to factor out all the H bars. Just to be clear, this H has nothing to do with Planck's constant. So it's sort of an unfortunate name, but that is the standard name in this model. So now I'm going to do a sort of redefinition. I'm just going to call this combination of J times H bar over 2 squared, I'm going to call that J. And this I'm going to also call H. So basically, I'm renaming the constants. So the model eventually becomes this. So I haven't really done much here, but the point I want to make is that you shouldn't worry about the fact there's H bars over twos and stuff. You can always just shove those into whatever the parameters in your model are, and you can deal with them later. So we're not going to care about those as we're solving the problem. Okay, so that was the first step. Now we have a model which we can really work with. But the next step is we want to make this precise. So, like for example, so here I have multiple spins, but I've written an operator that looks like just sigma ix. I told you earlier that that's not allowed, right? This sigma ix operator acts only on site I, but I have many spins. So that's not really a well-defined operator. So we have to think about what does that actually mean? So to be concrete, again, I'm gonna look at just the two-site model. So we have H equals minus J times sigma 0z, sigma 1z, minus H times sigma 0x plus sigma 1x, which really means H equals minus J times sigma 0z tensor sigma 1z. So that's one tensor operator that acts on two spins. Minus H times sigma 0x tensor identity on 1 plus identity on 0 tensor sigma 1 on x. So now this is a very concrete thing. This is an operator for which we have just learned exactly how to write down a 4x4 matrix. Okay, so at this point, I'm actually not going to continue lecturing right now, but instead we're going to do some more exercises, which will take up pretty much the rest of the class. So I had sent you this IPython notebook, but we're actually not going to get to the programming part of things today. We still have a fair bit of sort of physical understanding to get before we're ready to do programming. What we're going to do is sort of deal with this two-site situation pretty much by hand. So what we want to do is the following. So the first thing to do is to find a 4x4 matrix for this sigma 0 cross sigma 1 term, sigma z 0, sigma z 1 term. And then once you do that, we want to find the eigenstates and eigenvalues of the Hamiltonian in the case when this little h parameter here is 0. Furthermore, we're going to show that in each of these eigenstates, the expectation value of sigma 0x tensor identity 1 plus identity on 0 tensor sigma x 1 is equal to 0. Then in your next exercise, you're going to do the opposite, which is to find a 4x4 matrix for sigma 0x tensor identity 1 plus identity 0 tensor sigma x 1 to find the eigenstates and eigenvalues of H when j is equal to 0. And then to show in each of these eigenstates, the expectation value of sigma 0 z tensor sigma 1 z is going to be 0. And then finally, the last one is, of course, basically trivial once you've done the first two. Find the 4x4 matrix for H in the most general case. So actually, let me swap the orientation of this thing so we can see the whole exercises at once. Yep. So go ahead and write these down, and then I'll send you back to breakout rooms to discuss and work on this. Actually, before we do that, also let me say one word that's kind of like a hint for the second one, in particular for this part. That you should work in the basis, or maybe that's not the right way to say it. You should remember that that this sigma x tensor identity commutes with identity tensor sigma x. And don't use the matrix that you just made. OK, so I'm going to go ahead and send you to the breakout rooms, and then we'll